On today's episode, we are doing another Q&A mashup, and this one is all about hormones. We talk about pellets, we talk about progesterone needed for estrogen therapy, and we talk about chronic UTIs. The one thing I want to say is there is a lot of nuance to this stuff, and so we give a ton of information on all of these questions, but if you are someone that feels like you are dealing with one of these or other hormonal issues, please feel free. This is what we do. We help people individually with these problems. We have a link in the show notes where you can schedule a free 15-minute consult with our team to talk and see if it is a right fit for you, because hormonal issues, gut issues, all of the symptoms that you might be dealing with may very well be a deeper rooted thing that you cannot see. That is what we specialize in. So if you are struggling, if you need that support, feel free, click the link, schedule a call, and we would love to talk to you. And now onto the show. When you look good, you feel good. That's the only way I feel you should. Coulda, woulda, never did it for you. Gotta do it for the love, do it for the culture. Feel it in your soul, life like a roller coaster. Got its ups and its downs, but you gotta keep going. Don't stop when you still got motion. Stay dedicated, daily devotion. Hello and welcome back to the Food Code. It is Wednesday and we have another mashup for you because we got a ton of questions. From if you go to fitmomlife.com/ask, you can submit your questions to the podcast and we can answer them. And these are all hormone related. So we are going to do a little hormonal mashup Q&A today and cover some of these questions, and hopefully they help you understand things better. And that is always our purpose with the Food Code, is to help you understand female bodies better and health and your body and things you can do, and just be more knowledgeable, because knowledge is power, man. And if you are not already, we answer questions like this often in the Fit Mom Society. So that is our online portal. That is I would say it's kind of like a Facebook page, but better, because you don't have annoying people on social media that are like bots that show up in there and try to tell you that you'll win $3,000 if you comment below. And we talk about actual health questions, and we do lives every other week. We have courses coming out monthly, so tons of great benefit in there. We have the link in the show notes. If you are not a part of that, it is a small monthly fee, but for everything we put in there, it's well worth it. So
it's a lot of work,
lots of work, but worth it. So we want to start with this question. I am 56, not sure if I'm done with menopause. So here's the thing. Once you finish your year without a cycle, you are never done with menopause. You are postmenopausal now forever.
And sometimes it comes back.
Sometimes it comes, well, rarely. If you're on HRT, it's more the hormones creating it. But you are probably asking if you're done with perimenopause. And my guess would be yes. The average age a female finishes perimenopause is 51 and then enters into menopause. But you're on the patch and progesterone and a small dose of testosterone. And then the last year, you've been getting UTIs that are getting harder to get rid of. They seem to pop up when I swim in any kind of water. I went to a doctor of urogynecology and reconstructive pelvis surgery. She did some in-office tests and said it looked perfectly healthy and suggested more estrogen cream to maybe help with leaking. Not really having a leaking problem since pelvic floor PT, which is awesome that you did that. I feel like she was a waste of time and money. That is okay. Honest opinion, but okay. I am in St. Louis, and do you have any insight on the direction that might help? I'm thinking the gut, but where to start? I would agree with the gut. I also would not necessarily say that the more estrogen might not be of help. That I think that could be a solution too. So I'll let you kind of dive into the gut piece.
Yeah. So I think, first of all, you mentioned that this is they seem to pop up anytime that you swim in any kind of water in terms of the UTIs. So swimming pools, ponds, lakes, all of that stuff, they're really kind of festivals for bacteria. Parasites, E. coli, Shigella, Salmonella, Campylobacter, there's a lot of things. And so I would just say, if you notice that that is happening, then I would make sure that, obviously, you know, you're cleansing right after, like try to take a shower, you know, and things like that. But there's a few considerations here in terms of, you know, the health of your vaginal tissues and the gut microbiome. I mean, yes, this could certainly be an area to look at because Bacteria can travel, right? Bacteria can travel. We see it a lot in terms of candida more specifically, or parasites, to be honest with you. But I would honestly say, you know, considering your age and where you're at in life, we know that low estrogen and the health of the vaginal tissue declines. And so generally in menopause, you're going to see more urinary tract infections, incontinence, frequency, like you going to the bathroom a lot more. And so this is again where we would kind of say it's great that you've gone and you've looked at the physical aspects with the urologist and whatnot, but I would want to know more here. I would want to know, okay, so you're on estrogen. What is the ratio here to progesterone and testosterone? I think it's also important to know that the vaginal tissue is very estrogen sensitive. So as we age, it can become dry and thin. This can also happen after having a hysterectomy. Like, it doesn't even have to be just really as you age. It just leaves you, though, more vulnerable to having those urinary issues. And so generally, the first line of treatment, if you weren't on HRT, I would be saying to use really good vaginal lubricants and moisturizers. We've talked about this before in our full script account. We actually have a protocol basically with some different products in there that you can do that are really nice. There's like vitamin E and coconut oil and shea and whatnot, or you can do creams, vaginal creams. I know a lot of doctors recommend doing that. And a lot of hormone menopause experts recommend doing the creams more so intravaginally, especially if you're struggling with the vaginal tissue irritation there. And so that would be my guess. I would just want to know, what else is going on. But I think it's also important to know, just from the UTI perspective in general, for people who are listening, like, women are more susceptible to getting UTIs. Mm-hmm. And I think this probably goes without saying, but there's a couple of things that we should call out. Number one is if you're dehydrated, right, that is going to cause your urination to be more potent with bacteria. So you want to get hydrated, well hydrated. Or else, right? Like, things are just more potent in the urinary tract. And if then you're holding your pee a lot because maybe you're working or whatnot, that's not a great thing either. So we think about kidney health. We think about electrolytes here. I'd be thinking about, sodium, potassium, all of those things. I would also be thinking about, just your hygiene. So sexual hygiene, making sure that you're going to the bathroom after you have sex, that you are wiping properly. I think a lot of people forget that there's a correct way to wipe the vagina.
Yeah.
So you might want to wipe back, front to back, right? Not the other way around. So I know it's challenging for some individuals.
Yeah.
The other thing is, again, I'm going back to the situation here where you're talking about the swimming pools.
I think it's the wet bathing suit.
It could be. But this is really where I think about what is the microbiome in the vagina. That's really where I would target. If I was, somebody that was like working this case, I'd want to see absolutely, bacteria, and we would look at the gut and all of those things. But I would probably advise doing something like Ultraflora Women's.
Yeah.
And you can do that intravaginally, but you would probably need to do that for several weeks to re-inoculate the microbiome of the vagina. And then I think there's a couple of things, that we can, of course, direct you to in full script that we have in their supplement recommendations for urinary tract infections. But I'm also just going to say this, if you've had this frequently and then you're treating it with antibiotics, you're an open wound. It's going to keep coming back. So just like anything else, post-antibiotic care is really important to heal and seal the microbiome. You wipe out a lot of good bacteria. I know many people who have a lot of yeast infections or vaginal microbiome issues, if you will, whether that's irritation or itching or whatnot, but it's not necessarily the yeasty discharge, that have lost the good bacteria. And so that's where you need to look at re-inoculating basically that vaginal microbiome, very similar to how you should re-inoculate the gut microbiome after antibiotics.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking if it happens after you swim, I mean, bacteria grows in moist environments, right? And so you're probably sitting in a bathing suit, mm-hmm. and that moist environment in the bathing suit, it's kind of like if you peed a little bit in your underwear, it's going, well, like if people leak, sorry, I'm not saying like if you stood there and peed a little bit, no, if you leak and then there's that moist environment, that is much more likely for bacteria to proliferate within. And so I think it's more the moist environment of the swimsuit versus the actual swimming itself. It's not like the water, it would be my guess. And like Liz was saying, if you're chronically taking antibiotics, we see that UTI infections and yeast infections become very antibiotic resistant. And so it's not helping and it's actually just making things worse. So I would definitely recommend the ultraflora women's, even, you know, sometimes we need like a biocidin intravaginally, which I wouldn't recommend necessarily doing without the help of someone. But you need to somehow recreate that environment within the urinary tract area. Cause it's definitely imbalanced right now, which is causing this constant, I've had a couple cases with this where, like, after intercourse, every time they would get a bacterial infection. And once we started doing every time after intercourse, we use biocidin intravaginally, and it's been helping. So there are solutions to this, but the whole body picture is what we need to be looking at as well, because, you know, the bacteria, like Liz was saying, probably migrated from the gut issue. So estrogen can help if you also deal with dryness. That might be part of it. But I have a feeling that there's some deeper work that needs to go on. So the next question was, why do you not recommend pellets after a total hysterectomy? How long would you wait before starting a different hormone therapy? I've been on them for 10 years, but I'm stopping them. I'm scared of what's next once I stop. Yes. So this is a very loaded question. I would ask why you're stopping them. I don't love pellets long-term. I don't love them short-term either. And here's a couple of reasons why. How your body works with hormones is somewhat like a pulse. So your brain sends pulses to the rest of the body, these to create hormones in certain amounts. And it's kind of like a heartbeat, like boom, 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 boom. Pellets are like a boom of tons of hormones. Sorry if you have headphones on and that was really loud. It is a huge influxuation of hormones, very unnatural to the body. I will say this is why people you that usually go on them see very fast relief, because they are slapped over the head with tons of hormones. And if they were in a low hormone state, now you got a whole lot of hormones and you probably feel a lot better. Not how you want to be doing it constantly though, because what happens is there is usually a buildup of hormones due to hormone insensitivity that starts to happen. The body, because it is unnatural to the body, what happens is cells have to turn down sensitivity. Because imagine if you are getting yelled at or you have super loud music all day long, you have to kind of turn down. Mm-hmm. Eventually it stops becoming so loud, right? Because you get used to it, or you have to turn down the volume. And so cells in that way start to basically turn down their sensitivity to this high amount of hormones, because it's not safe. It's not safe to the body to have that much hormone all the time. So now what happens is your blood levels get really high, and you need more and more to feel the same effects. And so pellets start out really great, and then they go downhill.
It's like a roller coaster.
Yeah, they start to become not great. And I usually see it about 5 to 7 years down the line, if not sooner. And people will come to us, and they have extremely high levels of blood hormones and other issues. They have high hemoglobin, they have leg heaviness, they have, you know, bloating, they have weight gain, they have inflammation, all of these things, because hormones, if you don't fix other problems, can create more problems. And so coming off of them, I will tell you, can be kind of nasty. I hate to say it. The one thing I would highly recommend is maybe like a hormone plus complete, or a Metapure to help with the detoxification of hormones. But you're probably going to swing in the other direction, and you're going to go through a detoxification period of these hormones. So you're going to probably have symptoms come back, to be totally honest. I'm really surprised that someone recommended pellets after a total hysterectomy, to be totally honest. Normally they recommend like a patch or an oral route. I'm actually really surprised. So interesting.
Yeah, I would say, you know, in terms of other things, you talk a lot about that in the hormone course, and mm-hmm. you talk a lot about it in your hormone factor too, just with some of that. Sometimes it does take like a hormonal like detox period, and that's something that we would do one-on-one.
So usually it's like 3 to 6 months.
I would also say, you know, who's been managing this, right? You've been on them for 10 years. But I'm stopping them. So are you stopping them because of financial reasons? Are you stopping them because you've listened to our podcast and you're like, hey, I realize that maybe it's not the best. Are you really imbalanced? Are you dealing with a lot of symptoms? I think like there's so many questions to ask about like why we're stopping them too, because I think you can definitely detox them, but you may want to also put in some support, gentle support, natural support. Like here, I'm thinking, for example, vitamin C is helpful. Chasteberry, things like that in terms of progesterone. I kind of would be based upon like where you're at the end of the pellets. So I have in the past tested my clients when they're coming off of pellets to kind of see where they're at. And then that's how we approach and we address what the next steps are going to be. because every human body is so different. You know, I know some people love pellets. Some people really don't.
People that love pellets are usually people that have been on them for 1 to 3 years. Yeah. And then after that, I usually see more and more issues because what happens is you go through roller coasters. Mm-hmm. By the end of your pellet, you feel awful again, right? And then a lot of times you have to get a higher dose over time. And so again, very unnatural to the body, not my favorite form. So yeah. Next and last question. What is the reason if you are taking estrogen, you also need to be taking progesterone? So this is in the relation to HRT. So if someone's taking estrogen, like oral estrogen or an estradiol patch, we typically recommend progesterone. And this is because although not really common, you want to protect against the potential of estrogen-based cancers development. So cancer is a very nuanced, multifaceted thing. It is not just the estrogen that can drive it, but the estrogen can sometimes be a factor if there's like, you know, a history of breast cancer or a history of uterine cancer, endometrial cancer, things that are, that can be estrogen driven. Again, there's many pieces to cancer. It is not just estrogen. Let me emphasize that very heavily. Also, something to consider is that there was a very large study done in 2002. It was called the Women's Health Initiative. And this is where the fear around estrogen came from. And what they found was that they put a control group on estrogen and a progestin. And there was a slightly higher risk of cancer development. So it was a 0.8 out of 100. Higher, like a very, actually statistically insignificant, but of course, media picked up on it. It turned in all of the news. Every person came, like a whole host of people started going off their hormones, dealing with tons of symptoms. Doctors wouldn't prescribe it anymore. It was really bad. And since then, the people that did the research within the study have even come out and spoken against it and said, like, it was not properly conducted. It wasn't the estrogen. It was actually the progestin group. So people that were in just the estrogen group, because there were different groups, there was estrogen only, there was estrogen and progestin, and then there was a control group with nothing.
Yeah. And let's touch on that though. So progestin is a synthetic, it's man-made yes. progesterone. So it's not, it's progestin, right? So yes. progesterone is what your body makes naturally as a hormone. And we do have that available, bioidentical progesterone. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times what you're seeing in terms of what's coming from conventional medicine or in a birth control form, it's progestin. Yes. And so again, that's synthetic, yes. man-made.
And progestin also has been shown to increase blood pressure, cause hair loss, drive anxiety, depression, testosterone-like, increased risk of breast cancer. So what they found was it was not the estrogen. It was actually the progestin that was the biggest driver of this slightly higher risk of cancer. So they continued that study on with just the estrogen group. It actually wasn't ever, you know, publicized that it continued on, but down many years, and they never saw an increased risk of breast cancer with just the estrogen group. So we say that we like having progesterone in place because you want to reduce the possibility of that, you know, the potential of estrogen turning harmful within the body, which it can in some bodies. Some people are very predisposed to that genetically, and it's just the reality of it. Progesterone also has a ton of benefit. You have progesterone receptors in every part of your body, not just your uterus. So I don't care what doctors say that if you don't have a uterus, you don't need progesterone. Yes, you do. It improves heart health. It stimulates hair growth. It improves mood and sleep. It reduces cancer risk. Like there's so many benefits to progesterone. So we like to see both in place.
Yeah. It also helps in terms of like when we think about osteoporosis, bone loss, fracture. So making sure that you're more balanced there with estrogen and progesterone is important. And then when we think about like calming, like that is more of a calming hormone. So if you have unopposed estrogen, you can still be dealing with a lot of mood issues, sleep issues, things like that. Vaginal symptoms too. So, I mean, I know that estrogen gets a lot of rap in terms of vaginal symptoms, but low progesterone can also cause, like we're talking like very low progesterone here, dryness, itching, burning, painful intercourse, things like that. So I think it's just important to understand, like it's going to be what's right for you. And we actually had a whole conversation. So I'll direct you back to, the podcast that we did with Dr. Rob. He talked a lot about menopause, cholesterol, estrogen, HRT, and those types of things. We did touch on progesterone in there. We also talked with Megan from Vital Med about this as well. And so I just think it's really important because estrogen is one that everybody turns to. But when you really look at the research around progesterone and like even the symptoms, like low progesterone symptoms can also result in night sweats and hot flashes. It's not just estrogen, migraine, headaches, you know, all of those types of things. So I just think that, you know, if you're in that stage of life, looking at the ratios of estrogen to progesterone is really where it's at, right? You need to test and you need to understand that. So, and I think that there's enough information here on our podcast too, but we could do it, you know, a whole other one with some other research if you really wanted to bring to your doctor, because, you know, I think it's your healthcare right to ask if they're going to give you a prescription, you know, for another prescription. And then also just make sure that it's actually progesterone that they're giving you and not progestin. Cause sometimes people get generics, they don't read the label and they're taking, you know, basically birth control.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know? I think doing another podcast on birth control and perimenopause.
Actually we have a functional OBGYN coming out, so we can maybe talk with him.
Here's about the thing, guys. Birth control is synthetic. So if you're afraid of estrogen but you're being prescribed birth control and perimenopause to control, you're taking estrogen. I mean, yes, you can take a progestin only birth control, but like still, what did the study show? That it was a progestin that was the problem. So I can argue for you if you want. Bring me to your doctor's appointments. Okay. So thank you so much for submitting questions. Hopefully you guys learned some more stuff today. And if you have any, remember, fitmomlife.com/ask, and we would be happy to answer your questions as well.
Put a smile on your face. Never let them take your joy away. Let the sunshine make your day. Take your hand of your loved one and dance the night away. Or get away and escape on a vacay. Life's a marathon, not a relay. It's up to you to do what you love to do. Let no one stop you.